And you're live.
Hey folks, thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. This is your host, Mike Lafferty. And today we are revisiting the subject of teen supers. Because it's a lot happening in that area right now. And also Mr. Brendan Conway from Magpie Games and author of the celebrated RPG Masks, A New Generation is joining us. So, hey Brendan, thank you for joining.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
And today we've also got Walt Rebilliard. How you doing, Walt?
Under caffeinated, but ready to go.
Okay, and we've got Jacob Blackman,
who is just right caffeinated and ready to go.
And joining us from across the pond in bonnie old England is Aid Smith. How you doing, Aid?
I'm good, thank you.
All right, excellent. So jumping right in there, it's Teen Supers, and you know, Young Justice is coming out soon. Any news on that, Jacob? I know that's kind of your thing.
Well, they haven't set an official release date. They have said it will be, it should be early in 2018. We're hoping to get a more definitive release date on that sometime in the summer or fall. I've been keeping track with a lot of the news and Twitter followers, and especially it's a good news source to follow is the Whelmed podcast. They were recently talking about how Jason Spisak, who is the voice actor for Wally West, aka Kid Flash, has been hinting about doing some work for the project. So whether that means he's doing, you know, flashback scenes, no pun intended, or they're going to be bringing Wally back from whatever happened to him at the end of season two, spoilers, we'll be finding that out.
Say that in the front of the thing.
considering how long the show has been on, no.
keep binging YJ.
Keep binging YJ. Yeah.
Do you think there's going to be extra characters in this, or is it going to be the same core team?
I would imagine that considering the transition between seasons one and two, they're going to have some time once again pass by, and because they've got a nice selection of new characters that have been available in the comics in the meantime. So, you know, whether we'll see, you know, the new son of Superman as a new potential Superboy, you know, whether or not they're going to bring Damian Wayne into the show, considering he's been pretty popular in the various DC animated films, you know, and I'm sure any of this is potential, but Greg Weisman is very cleverly keeping his mouth shut on all such matters, so we can only speculate.
And speculate we shall. So, all right. So I didn't realize that was 2018. That's wow. That's a long buildup. that's like it, time between Doctor Who series. So,
exactly. Terrible.
I was hoping it would be sooner, considering they made the announcement just last year. But you know, animation takes time.
A lot of time. Yeah.
Well. Yeah. I mean. Yeah. I was going to make a stupid joke, but I'll save that for later. Hey, other cool stuff happening in the Young Supers genre, and I'm so glad Brendan's reading this book, because I was afraid I was the only one. Turns out Aid's reading it too. The ongoing champion title at Marvel, written by Mark Waid. What are you digging about that, Brendan?
Well, the core premise is something that rings really true to me, because it feels like it's Masks in comic book form, straight up, where it's a whole bunch of young superheroes who are saying that the way you have been doing this for so long doesn't work, and we're going to try it differently. We're going to try to reach people in new ways. We're going to try to be heroes in a new way that's our own and not yours. And I sort of just adore the idea that it's a comic that's truly building on the fact that we've been having these stories for so, so long, and it sort of only makes sense that the established order has been here for so many years. It's time for new ideas to be coming in and to challenge the established order and say, is that the right way to do things? And to try to reinvent. It's like this natural progression that reflects real world tendencies, but also while you get to punch monsters in the face and you get to watch Hulk kissing someone that I won't say for spoiler sake, and like you get all the cool teenage drama stuff as well that, you know, makes my little heart fly.
I don't think if it was Liza Minnelli, right?
Yes.
See, I told you, gem jokes would come later. It's the feature of the podcast. So
does Twitter figure heavily into how they're doing their new approach to superheroing? All the community policing stuff?
They definitely have referenced Twitter then, and like, you know, checking to see what's trending and keeping in mind like how much attention they're getting, and the fact that I think a recent plot line is somebody starts using their own name against them, essentially. Somebody starts using the Champions tagline against them. And
that was just last issue.
Yeah.
Hey, that's Christopher McLaughlin from Green Ronin. How you doing, Chris?
Well, that sucked, but how are you?
Surely you're referring to technical issues you were facing, right?
Yes. Damn the whole entire internet to hell.
The internet deserves it. Chris, I think you know everybody except for Brendan Conway, who is the author of Masks of New Generation, and he's with us today.
Well, hey, hello.
I'm not usually this cranky, by the way.
It's fair.
And Brendan, you're probably familiar with Chris. He wrote a bunch of stuff for Green Ronin, Mutants and Masterminds, Hero High, Noir, lots of Silver Age and Golden Age. And
most importantly, I'm there to take a bullet for Steve Kinson in case somebody makes a go at him.
You're the worst body double in the world, though, Chris.
I'm not a body double. I'm just there to absorb the bullet.
Oh, okay, you're more like the Secret Service.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Well, that works. So we were just talking about Champions, the new ongoing at Marvel. You've been reading that by any chance?
I feel like I'm talking myself completely out of these podcasts, but I haven't picked up a Marvel comics in 30 years.
Yeah, all right. We'll talk DC then. are you picking up Titans by Dan Abnett these days?
I'm sorry. What about Mr. Abnett?
He's writing Titans. Are you reading it?
I picked up a couple of issues right after the rebirth thing, and it's his usual awesome stuff. I mean, it's amazing for a guy that's put out that much good stuff for so long, and it still doesn't feel like he gets the credit that he deserves. Because I'm not naturally a big Titans fan, but I found it to be a very good read.
Yeah, I would. I'm having the same experience with Aquaman. I'm not a huge Aquaman fan usually, but he's been doing a great job with it. But for everything Dan's been involved with, including the current reincarnation of the Guardians that makes it to the Silver Screen, he doesn't seem like he has the kind of profile you would think maybe he deserves.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Now,
I would agree.
On the Titans title, I understand they're doing it, because I haven't gotten that one yet. I understand. Then the first bunch of issues were mostly dealing with Wally coming back.
Yes.
What about it that catches you? What about the writing of it that kind of brings you into the story?
Well, to me, the thing about Abnett's writing is he just seems to really, 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 really nail the characters. The fact that, you know, you used to be Tiny Robin and you used to be Tiny Wonder Woman and you used to be Tiny Aquaman, that means nothing to me. That gives me absolutely no reason to want to read a book. But, you know, he seems to have caught these characters kids, but he seems to have really, really captured the thing that I think really drew me into 90s DC. Back when I was in sort of my awkward 20s, I didn't have the excuse of being a teenager anymore, and yet I had actual responsibility thrown at me, but I really still didn't feel, I felt like a teenager, not really to deal with it. He seems to have really captured that kind of uncertain place in their lives. And it makes an interesting character counterpoint to this whole them coming to terms with rebirth. You know, I mean, it's them at an awkward stage of their lives dealing with a very awkward, oh, wow, you know, a whole bunch of our past just got completely erased. Very, very interesting, dramatic line to read. A dramatic line to read about. So, yeah, I mean, just, and really, it just, it, you know, really good stuff, I thought.
Right on. I know they brought over Cyborg. He's not in the...
He's not in the Titans anymore. He's over at the Justice League now, right?
Yes, he's basically DC's the Inhumans. We're going to keep putting him out there until you love him, damn it.
That's the title that they're sending from biweekly to monthly, isn't it?
They'll probably make it daily until we love this character, until he's bigger than Superman. I tell you what, I'm not surprised if they're gonna be like the Jehovah's Witnesses in the Mormon. They'll be coming door to door. Have you heard the good news about Cyborg? Can I have just a few minutes of your time to talk to you about Cyborg?
They'll be, what is it, boom tubing into people's living room?
I'm not surprised. You know, I mean, this makes the push for that first Muppet movie seem like a soft sell. You know?
Considering what an unpopular jerk Cyborg was when he was originally created for the Teen Titans, it's pretty surprising turnaround.
I mean, that's part of it. I mean, the new Teen Titans that Marv Wolfman created are Marvel characters, which is fine. It was great takes on these characters. It was wildly successful. He does not belong among the Justice League. That's DC's pantheon of gods. That kind of mopey, miserable, jerky character doesn't fit. I mean, he doesn't fit in that group, and he never will.
I suppose that's why in the animated movie, he started hanging out with the Titans instead.
Well, he makes perfect sense as a Titan. That's the group that he was meant to play off of.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, I never liked Cyborg before I saw him in the, going back like 10 or 12 years to the Teen Titans Go. I guess it was just Teen Titans back then. Especially the dynamic between him and Beast Boy back in the day. Really enjoyed that. Didn't care for the character at all before then. And I'm really annoyed I don't get to see that in the comics. But, you know, that's how it goes, unfortunately.
Well, they actually gave him a personality in the Teen Titans series. Otherwise, in the comics, he's pretty much just the, man, my dad saved my life by turning me half metal. Screw that guy. That's all he ever talked about.
He is Captain Dour, yeah. Oh, hey, I'm going to do an awkward interruption because I forgot to mention this earlier. The Banff Podcast once a year does an award to honor the best in superhero RPGs. We have a great big poll we open up and ask, you know, called the Gamer's Choice Poll. Try to gather all the games we can that were released in the superhero genre in the previous year. Ask everyone to vote on them. And we impanel a crack roundtable of judges to select some of their own highlights. And we just published the winners a couple days ago. And Brendan, as you know, you were runner-up. You were just 10 votes behind Aaron Alston's Strike Force, which, considering how popular that game was, that's quite an achievement. And Masks New Generation was also one of Steve Kenson's picks. Steve Kenson was one of our judges, so congrats on that.
Thank you so much.
And just wanted to do a quick rundown of the other winners, because it seems like I should. As I mentioned, Aaron Alston's Strike Force was the overall vote winner on the popularity contest. Steve Kenson also called that out for one of his judges' awards, as well as Jacob's Superpowered Legends and Iconic Legends series from Rogue Genius Games. So congrats, Jacob.
Thank you.
And Steve Trustin, who I should have invited to this podcast, but I didn't because I'm mentally deficient. He was another one of our judges, and he picked the Awesome Power series from Bash, which, hey, that's your art, right?
I did contribute art to that, yes.
Yeah. And Jacob was also a judge this year, and he singled out Uncanny X-Men HeroClix, which is the first non-RPG award we've given, but that's cool. And the template tome for Mutants and Masterminds by Crystal Fraser, who is the new developer for M&M and was kind enough to grace us on this podcast last time. So just wanted to call up the award winners really fast, and now we can awkwardly segue to talking about comics. So,
okay, so one question for Jacob then. Right.
Yeah.
X-Men Hero Clicks, is that recent?
I'm
because
sorry.
Marvel actually licensing the X-Men products? That's rarity, isn't it?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch the question. Someone coughed as you asked it.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was me. I'm sorry.
Is the X-Men HeroClix recent? Or is it something that's been quite old? Because Marvel don't license X-Men stuff anymore, do they? So
The Uncanny X-Men came out in the later months of 2016.
Crikey. Wow, that's a lot later than I thought, because obviously Mr. Fox has got the X-Men license, so I'm surprised that they even...
It's the they have the HeroClix pretty much has the license to do anything of the comic book line that cool. Marvel has. So they've the next one they're going to put out is in fact called Deadpool and the X-Force. So we're going to be seeing a lot of Deadpool characters there, X-Force characters there from their various incarnations.
Aid loves Deadpool. That's his favorite.
I despise Deadpool. I despise Deadpool.
It's a future comic, so you come on, get with it. Deadpool, yeah. Gwenpool, it's where things are going in the future.
And no, that's the problem. That Champions issue's got Gwenpool in it. That nearly put me straight off there, so that's never good. So.
I'm going to have to sketch up some art and create Aid Pool.
He would love that. He would love that.
I love it when the podcast briefly turned into WWE Monday Night Raw. You know, it's like you're deliberately begging Aid. You know.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of obscure things, Walt, pre-show you mentioned the Clever Man as a teen supers kind of thing. What the F is the Clever Man?
All right, so it's an Australian, I believe it's Australian. It's an Australian TV series. The first episode came in on Netflix, or the first season rather came in on Netflix, and it was about the Clever Man, which is it's the nickname for a person for the Aboriginal people who has a special connection to the universe. They can they have certain powers. They can interact with the universe in certain ways. They can heal people. It's supposed to be almost like a champion for the Aboriginal people. And what ends up happening is they find out that within the Aboriginal population, there is actually an alien race that is possibly older than mankind and has been hiding within the population ever since the Aboriginal people were discovered. The people at large in the population call them Harrys, and they're almost Cro-Magnon in their appearance until to kind of hide or go out. They shave down. They'll take a razor and shave themselves up so that they can pass as normal. They're stronger than normal humans. They're bigger than normal humans. But because of the fear of the population, they're put in almost like a containment zone. The Clever Man is about the actual Clever Man of the tribe. The old leader has been kind of like selling his services. He's kind of been a real jerk, and he dies, and the mantle goes on to his nephew, which is a kid that doesn't want it. He's dropped out of school. He's running a nightclub. He's kind of in a menage a trois with his two best friends. There's a lot going on in a series, but it's very interesting because one of the other central characters is one of the Harrys, and it's the interaction between one segment of a population versus another, and how the young kids among those populations are trying to deal with that when really nobody cares. You know, it's all the adults that are causing all the tension. So it's really a great series. Very, very interesting.
So what other superhero franchise would you compare it to? Because what you're describing to me kind of sounds like angsty teen caveman supers.
I would say X-Men, kind of like their Days of Future Past stuff. Things like that, because I mean, it isn't just one guy. The Clever Man is actually a normal person of Aboriginal descent. He's kind of like the bridge between all these separate worlds, and but like the Harrys, you know, they're all extraordinarily powerful. So I mean, it's really one race versus another, and it's very well done. I've seen the whole first season, and I'm just praying they do another one so that I can watch the second. A little bit of a slow start in the beginning, but once you got going, it was amazing. It really reminded me of like X-Men comics and how they tried to tackle social issues as far as like divisions of race and stuff like that. It was very, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the series. I really enjoyed powered version of superpowers that are presented, along with the kind of almost mystical, mysterious quality of the Clever Man. So it was really a fun way to take the kind of superhero genre and kind of twist it around a little bit. So okay. If you get a chance, check it out. It's really neat, it's just different enough for American audiences so that you're interested the whole time, because you know certain expressions that they use, the way that they look at superpowers and superhumans.
Does Vegemite come up?
Yes, it does.
Okay, all right.
And one of the main characters is actually I'm terrible with names. Ser Jorah on Game of Thrones, the love interest, the guy who's always in the friend zone for the Khaleesi.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really good show. If you get a chance, check it out.
Hey, speaking of, I don't know why I didn't think of this before. I'm talking about Teen Supers Legion on FX right now, based on the X-Men comics character. Has anyone been watching that? Silence. Okay, that is a trippy.
No.
No. Is everyone watching it?
I heard it's super trippy.
It's like weirder than Twin Peaks. It's, I mean, in a good way. I'm really enjoying it. It's just, I think I don't really know, have a full opinion of it until the season's over. But they were going to set it in the same universe as the Fox X-Men movies. But I guess there was some kind of hang up. So instead of
I saw a story this week that Patrick Stewart might be willing to do the show. And I think the moment that Patrick Stewart is willing to do the show, it will be set in that same universe.
Oh, I would imagine so. Yeah. I thought he was done after Logan, though.
So was Sean Connery after Diamonds Are Forever, you know?
Well, thank God he came back and did, you know, Never Say Never Again, because that was a classic.
Yeah. Well, I'm not, let's face it, most of the time people ought to stay retired, but I'm just saying, think things change, especially when people start putting zeros on the end of checks.
True. Well, hey, another awkward segue. I should just change this podcast to the Awkward Segue Podcast, but
which would Brendan, be awesome, but we'd have to change all the logos.
Yeah, I would have to change all the jumpsuits, and I just got those steam cleaned. Yeah, there's a sunk cost fallacy here at some point. But Brendan Conway is here. He took the Apocalypse World engine into his hands and sculpted it like a Pygmalion into masks. This awesome RPG. And Brendan, tell us all about it. What was the motivation you had to do this, and what motivated you to want to come out with the sequel, the Next Generation thing?
Well, first of all, I just have to say that it's the best description I've heard of how I did this, that it was this mythic endeavor. Many lives were lost. So it all started off for me because there was one, I think it was a variant cover, but it may actually have been the cover for one of the all-new X-Men issues, where it's the young superhero team of the X-Men having traveled forward into the future, and they're dancing around in the future, and it was a picture of young Cyclops kissing X-23, and it was like the light bulb going on of like, there, I want that, and I want to make a thing that does that, and we'll make that happen consistently, and we'll keep circling back to that, and we'll make that a focal point, this sort of insanity of a time traveler has come forward into a world where he's got an older self and is kissing the clone of his future self's rival, but also they're both teenagers and they have teen feelings. And so then I just started noodling around on systems and playing around with it over and over and over and over and over and iterating so as to find out how to make it do what I wanted, but also work my way towards figuring out what I actually wanted it to do or say or be, more than just get to play a teen superhero. I wanted it to push and say something and be like about my experience of having been young and what I thought that was like. And that became the overriding thing for me to try to make the system do.
And okay. Now, go ahead, Mike.
No, please go ahead.
Now, when you were putting this together and you chose the Powered by the Apocalypse World engine, there we go. I can has the English. How did you start approaching coming into those playbooks? Because I apologize, I haven't read your book yet, but notice I put in the yet. There's a possibility here. The thing I understand about masks is that it's very relationship driven, and whereas a lot of times, like Dungeon World, Apocalypse World, very action oriented driven. What kind of things did you have to do to twist the playbooks to make it more about the relationships?
Yeah, so they often have this basic relation mechanic. Dungeon World has bonds where you fill in the name of another character and then it fleshes out the sentence. So you and I killed the Orc King together. And that's just to fill in a backstory and make us not be people who just popped into existence with no connections at all. So that's still here to help create the relationships, but the real relationships and masks come from this influence mechanic. Where the idea is, if somebody has influence over you, it means you care about what they think or say or do. So all adults have influence over you by default, because you're young and you're still figuring out who you want to be and who you are. So you don't get to choose and say, nah, I don't care what Superman thinks. When Superman shows up and tells you that you just did a bad job, that's going to hit you, at least at the start of things. And within the team, you'll trade influence around between you as well. And so there's this issue of, do my peers actually have the ability to affect how I see myself, how I think about myself? When, going back to sort of that example, when X-23 says that I suck as team leader, how is that actually going to affect me? Is it going to affect me? Does X-23 have influence over me? That influence feeds into you being able to shift other people's labels, where your stats are your labels, and that's how you see yourself. So other people, as they say things to you, will literally be changing your stats and moving them up and down. One always goes up, one always goes down. So over time, you might come to see yourself, for instance, as more and more of a danger, because people keep saying to you, you keep taking the most dangerous possible route to solve any problem. Why do you keep throwing cars at the bad guys? Stop throwing cars at the bad guys. And over time, that will affect you, that will change your stats, which in turn you as the player are like, well, I want to roll with my high stat, so I'm going to roll the thing that means I'm throwing cars, and it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle, all of which is meant to constantly make you pay attention to not just your own character sheet, but also what everybody is saying to you and how that's affecting you.
Wow. So did you pull a lot of like young people that you know to come up with? I just pulled up your move sheet from your website. Straight up creeping. That's got to be like the best name move ever. So how did you come up with some of the names of the moves, and was it all your collaborators and being like, dude, straight up creeping, or did you? Did you have like a soundboard to bounce some of this stuff off of?
So that one, I will specifically say that specific playbook, that's the Beacon. And one of my, perhaps my favorite character in all of comicdom is Kate Bishop, Hawkeye. And I adore every story about her. I adore the Matt Fraction Hawkeye run. I'm super excited for her current run. And, I stole a whole bunch of Kate Bishop quotes and made those the names of all of the moves in that playbook, because that is my ode to Kate Bishop. That is my Kate Bishop playbook. So that is a line from one of the issues in the Matt Fraction run of Hawkeye, where she's like watching people with her phone and she just goes straight up creeping.
That's awesome.
And in case we haven't said it enough on this podcast, Matt Fraction's Hawkeye is a towering work of heartbreaking genius, and you should read it right now or hold your manhood cheap if you do not, or your womanhood if you're a woman. Not discriminating against who should hold their gender identity cheap if you don't read that book, but it's awesome. It's, anyway, didn't mean to.
Read it.
Yeah, it's good.
Nope, so, totally with you.
What did you think about the Hawkeye in that one, as opposed to the Kate Bishop Hawkeye, and as opposed to the Kate Bishop in Young Avengers, the last series of that?
They are a little different. I mean, and it's the classic thing, right? Different writers make the character slightly different. In the two big pulls in my head are generally Young Avengers, Kieran Gillen, Kate Bishop, and the Hawkeye Matt Fraction Kate Bishop. And I like the Matt Fraction one. That's the one that defines her to me, because in this sort of irreverence, this sort of sass, this sort of competence, while also tendency to throw herself into things and get in way over her head. I think the Young Avengers putting her on the team sometimes has the effect of making her the adult. That was the role she took in the original Young Avengers run. She was often sort of the more level-headed one. Let me pull back on Patriot or Eli. And in the Kieran Gillen run, she was similarly the more adultish one and the more level-headed, cooler one. And that's fine, and it worked great in the team dynamics, but I really love her when she's like, yeah, but also I'm going to do something kind of crazy, and I have no money, and I'm going to get the shit kicked out of me because, you know, I'm Hawkeye.
Can you talk a little bit about Halcyon City and why that's the perfect place to tell these stories?
Sure, totally. There was originally this thing going on where I was like, I want you to be able to put it in any city you want. I want you to be able to make your own setting and fill in whatever details you want. And over time, what became clear is that actually made things harder to start it off, because it meant every time you played, you would have to invest this initial effort and say, ah, we got to figure out where we're playing. We got to figure out what the rules are. We got to figure out who's important, or like what the history of this place is, what the setup of superheroes and how it interacts with society is. So ultimately, I just said, okay, so Halcyon City, because I kind of like that name, is the default setting of Masks. And the key rules of it are that it's Marvel's New York, it's Metropolis, it's every major superhero city from every major comic book rolled up into one. All of everything happens there. If aliens invade, that's where they go. And you should have in your head this idea that you can pull from any piece of superhero history you want, because it's all happened there. And there have been heroes for generations. And that's the key that I just wanted everybody to be on the same page with to start from, because removing some of those elements tipped the balance for when I was trying to run Masks. If we said, well, superheroes have only come up into existence in the past 20 years, that actually changed things substantially. It meant there isn't this effect where you can have the 60-year-old superhero who's like, you kids suck at this.
Get off my lawn and clear your capes.
Exactly. Exactly. It changed the formula significantly, and I wanted to avoid, first of all, needing people to put in the effort to like define that themselves and just make it simple. Yep, you're in Halcyon City. It's every superhero city ever. Great. We've seen Marvel movies. We know what that looks like. And also to get those baseline important rules down. There have been superheroes before. It's no longer startling that you can lift a car. Like, people have seen that. I mean, it's still probably a little weird if you just go around lifting cars down the street. I don't recommend it, but people know this. This is not straight up the first time anybody has ever lifted a car. It is a thing that exists in the setting, and people are going to react to it differently as well.
So, in Halcyon City, are there both alligators and Morlocks in the sewers?
And alligator Morlocks.
Oh, my God. You just hooked me. I'm going to buy this tonight. All right. Can you talk a little bit about the art collaboration? I was just looking at the art for now, all the art in the PDF I just downloaded, which is free on the Magpie website, I understand.
Yep.
Hopefully I didn't just pirate something, because that would be awkward. The art and layout is very good, very tight. But the one image that in that PDF that really caught me was the image for the protege. Just the intensity on the look of that character's face is gorgeous. Can you talk about the art collaboration and working with an artist to kind of get the feel that you're trying to go for?
Totally. So we worked with Mike Lunsford, Michael Lee Lunsford, of the comic book Supernormal Step, or the webcomic Supernormal Step. That's where you can find most of his other work. But he's done lots of other little things. We found him because he did one of those articles of like redesigned superhero costumes, that I really like how they look. He is wonderful. He did great art for the book. And in particular, one of the things that was great with Mike was you could say, all right, I want this guy to be a villain who uses gears, and he like throws them. And then he would go away and come back, and voila, that hero exists, and he looks great. So Mike brought this huge ability to character design, to straight up create the character from relatively little detail and flesh them out and make them look awesome. So for those playbooks, we gave him basic details. We said certain things to him, like we want this one to be a young girl and she should be wearing kind of armor so she looks a little bit Batman-ish because that's this role. And he comes back and he presents that character to us and we're like, that's perfect. You captured exactly what we wanted for that character. And then since then, it's that back and forth, right? Where now that character exists, and I'm like, great, so that's the character you made. That character is now Hornet. She's a signature character of Masks. We're doing other things down the line where these signature characters matter, and I can build off of what Mike's given me. It was, I think, this ideal combination of the collaborative process, where like I'm not necessarily telling him exactly what to do. I'm building off of what he's saying to me with his art as much as he's going off of what we're giving him.
Nice. I really enjoyed looking at the cover too of the core book, because it's just all these kids sitting on, as you were talking earlier, on top of the giant robot, and you really get that sense of we're young, you're old, you suck. You know, I mean, it's just a really, really cool cover.
Thank you. That was definitely the key thing I wanted. I wanted anybody who looked at it to know that these kids hated old people. That's one of the crucial pieces of the game. P.S.
So now, if I understand correctly, and I haven't played Apocalypse World before, so forgive me, but it sounds like there's a lot of collaborative work between the GM and the players to you know, kind of create the relationship map ahead of time and that kind of thing.
Definitely. One of the things that you'll do when you create the characters is that relationship section that I said. You'll fill in everybody else's name, and so you'll have stuff like one of you is the Outsider. The Outsider is supposed to be Starfire. You're an alien. You're not from here. And you'll have a relationship that says you have a crush on blank, but you keep it under wraps. And so you'll put in another character's name in there, and it's my job as the GM to be like, okay, so why do you keep it under wraps? We know that you do. Is it because you're worried about what they'll say? Is it because your people don't allow this? What is the reason? And through those questions, we're going to flesh out the world over the course of the character creation process, and even as we get started. Just constantly asking those questions is going to fill in those details. The other part of the collaborative world building is the game presupposes an Avengers-style event. The thing that brought your whole team together, because you can be this disparate crew of misfits. And everybody has their own little question that builds on it. So it'll say something like, when our team first came together, we defeated a terrible opponent. Who was it? And I get to answer that because that's on my playbook. I can ask for input. I can be like, what do you think? What do you think we fought? But ultimately, it's my question and I get to answer. And through the course of those questions, we'll put together this picture of like, oh, yeah, totally. We came together because there's a giant Minotaur man and he was knocking over buildings. And we fought him in Midtown, and unfortunately, he destroyed the statue of the beloved first hero of the city. Whoops! But, you know, ultimately, we beat him, even if the mayor hates us now. And so that gives us this initial situation to springboard off.
All right, so I'm guessing this game does not lend itself well to, convention play. Because you get, sounds like all that prep work would probably be prohibitive for a situation like that.
It has its ups and it has its downs for convention play. I've run it a lot in a one-shot convention play style format. And the character creation process, this is that classic thing, right? Where character creation is part of play and it is fun. Like, we have fun making the characters and coming up with these connections and setting up this initial situation. But yes, it's always this lackluster feeling when we spend the first 2 hours of a four-hour game doing that. And then we spend the next 2 hours doing the first punch 'em up, awesome, cool opening to our entire comic. So often, like, it's been fun. I've never had a mass session where I've not come out of it and said that was a good time and I'd be interested in continuing to read that comic. But every time it's also been coming out of it and saying, I wish there were more episodes of that show or more issues of that comic. playing it in a campaign style format is what it's designed for, and would definitely give you much more room to play with all of these elements and really build it out, see things in play and at work.
Okay, well, I will not try to bug you into running a demo session for us in the podcast then, although I'm really interested in it. Just sounds like it's not really going to work on that kind of a time frame.
I don't have that kind of shame. I'll bug the shit out of you.
I'm happy to. All right, well, let's talk after the show, see if we can, if we're actually wanting to do that, because that's, I'd be totally up for it, but it sounds like it's a significant time investment for everyone involved, and I suspect you're a busy man, in addition to being a acclaimed RPG writer. I'm sure you have a day job and other responsibilities.
Well, this is the day job. I am fortunate enough to say that working for Magpie Games across all of their myriad things is what I do. So the good news is I can always say to my bosses and coworkers, I'm going to do this today. So it's relatively easy. So.
Wow, I am jealous. You're one of that rare fraternity of people who do this for a living. Congratulations.
Thank you. I am lucky as shit, and I feel bad about it.
Well, I think Jacob is also in that club with you.
I am. Hi.
Yeah, high five.
You know, you're reminding me of a night I spent at Gen Con with Rob Schwab and Steve Kinson, and I just seen Goodfellas before coming up there, and it finally hit me. You know, since I only do this part time, I'm like Henry Hill. You know, I'm not a genuine Sicilian. I can't be a made guy. I'm just an associate of the game industry. You know, the people that do it full time, they're like the made guys.
We actually used to joke in our game group when Owen Casey Stevens was the only full-time professional freelancer. We would call him the Game Father.
He's there like, you go.
I am merely a gamer blessed with many friends.
Amazing.
Okay, so I have a question for Brendan as well. Is it true you are releasing the iconic characters as actual write-ups, or are you just leaving them as the art and the actual playbooks?
So one of the things that we did unlock for the Masks Kickstarter is we're going to do an issue of the comic book, and I've already written an initial outline of a script for it. So we've never done this before. We're just going to have a good time with it. And that alone means those characters need to be a little bit more defined, and that's going to be a place where they actually come through. But that said, for a convention, Dreamation was just a couple weeks ago, and a friend of mine wanted to run a Masks long con with me. And so Matt, Aaron, and I put together this whole situation and scenario to run over the course of the convention, three whole sessions of play. So it was like a miniature campaign. And we wanted to slip past some of this initial work. We wanted to get into playing as quickly as possible. So we did create these core characters of Masks and pre-made the character sheets a little bit. So those are done, and we actually just put up a blog post, I think today. We put up a Kickstarter post a little while ago where we had them available, and we put up a blog post on our magpiegames.com blog where you can actually find them with a Dropbox link, open them up, and you'll have information about backstory, you'll have information about, you know, some of the initial choices made. I left some of the choices open for you because it's always fun when you're picking up the character to be like, yeah, I would like this cool thing, and I would like this cool thing, please. But yes, they are pre-made with backstories and available for anybody to go and grab.
Cool. I'll have to go and check my link then, because I've not seen that, so I have to go back and check my Kickstarter links.
We actually hit it behind an intense cipher, and you're going to have to do...
That's the problem.
Da Vinci Code level work, yeah. I want to make you earn it.
So what's next for Mask?
So we are in the final stages of work on our first supplement, which is the Halcyon Herald collection. This is supposed to be the collection of a newspaper editor of the Halcyon Herald who put together important articles from across the span of Halcyon's papers and publications, things that she thought were unsolved or important. And the point of this is just to be like, here's a whole bunch of cool articles written by a bunch of cool people. And they flesh out more things that are going on in the city, more villains that you can pull in, more heroes that you can pull in, and events that you can play off of. And then after that, we have Masks Unbound coming up, where we're going to have play sets that are going to take it into totally different directions and skew the core scenarios of Masks further. And finally, Secrets of Aegis, where we're going to do a whole bunch of stuff, similarly play sets and some special files having to do with Aegis, which is our not shield. It's the metahuman law enforcement division. And along with that, we've got some cool, fun, limited edition playbooks coming out to add even more options onto the roster so that I get even more joy out of people having analysis paralysis from picking which one they want.
So is the Aegis book going to have adult characters as the main characters, or is it, are we still going for a teen dynamic?
The scenario, the playset for the Secrets of Aegis one, is that you actually are part of this new division where Aegis said, these kids keep cropping up and they keep causing mayhem. We'd like to stop that. So what we're going to do is we're going to actually get them into our program early, and we're going to train them up from a young age and try
21 Jump Street Supers.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, exactly. So the idea, I still want to keep it focused on these young kids because the core pieces of the system are aimed at that so thoroughly, it would be hard to make it make as much sense for adult superheroes. And so that's one of those through lines that's going to be consistent across the board for all of Mask stuff.
Cool.
Cool. Well, looking forward to it. And we would be amiss if we didn't mention with both Aid and Chris here that there's a Mutants and Masterminds Young Hero book recently released in last year for Third Ed, and that is Hero High, which, Chris, you were a writer on that, correct?
I did shamelessly piggybacked on Lucian Solbon's brilliance, and what an honor that always is, because I think Lucian is almost too talented to be a game writer. I mean, I have never seen anyone that can write in so many different styles and somebody who can completely come in and just break down a genre like he did. You know, I've always said that the two best Eminem books we've ever done are Hero High and Hero High Second Edition. Because they're, you know, I mean, I have been in the classroom for 23 years, and I could not do a quarter of the job that Lucian does breaking down teen culture, how it exists in real life, how it's been portrayed in the teen comics. In fact, you know, the way the book plays with like people that aren't like hardcore gamers. I mean, my wife gamed some in college. It's definitely not her life. I showed her the book just because she likes Lucian personally. She turned to the section about like the different types of teachers. Within 5 seconds, she goes, "Oh, there's you." So yeah.
And I would love to get you to listen on the podcast sometime, but I understand he's very busy. In addition to his RPG stuff,
he has a day job in the computer industry, plus he's writing novels and stuff. So,
he was the head writer on Watch Dogs 2, right?
I have to admit, not being a big computer gamer myself, I don't much keep up with his credits, but if I were to get heavy in computer games, I'd probably start with his. I'll say that.
All right, well, cool. Hey, you know what? We should do a giveaway in this podcast. We haven't done one in a while. How about how about we give away the PDF of Masks of New Generation?
Hey, there you go.
So since that was a kind of feature, Walt, are we using your email address for that?
Sure. That's superscbr@gmail.com.
All right. Just drop an email there with Teen Supers as the subject line, and we'll throw them all into a big hat and mix them around and pull a name out and send that guy or gal a copy of the PDF of Mass a New Generation from Magpie Games. So there you go. And I hate to wrap things up, but I've got to go pick up a small boy who is not yet a teenager from daycare. So any closing thoughts before we wrap things up, guys?
Go out and pick up masks.
I was going to say go out and pick up Matt Fraction's Hawkeye, but I'll take yours too. I like that.
Like I said, I'm gonna shamelessly bully you into running an online game for this.
Hey, I gotta get in. What the hell happened with? I mean, wasn't there supposed to be more Matt Fraction Hawkeye, and it just kind of stopped and went to another writer? Do you know what happened there?
I don't. It's a wound in my soul that continues to bleed to this day.
Yeah, because I was really into it, and then I was like, hey, wait, Matt Fraction left, and I was still enjoying Sex Criminals, but I mean, I kind of miss what he was doing on Hawkeye.
Right, I'm right there with you.
So, well, it's a tragedy. What can we do? Chris, Aid, Jacob, any closing thoughts?
All good.
If I have the opportunity to shamelessly plug something, the new Superpowered Legends Coyote features an homage to a character who was recently featured in a movie with regeneration and claws. Enjoy that.
Is that Edward Scissorhands?
More of a teenage girl kind of thing.
Okay, all right, cool. They should totally reboot Edward Scissorhands as a teenage girl. That would be huge. But yeah, Logan, great movie. And of course, if you're looking for a Logan homage from Jacob, that would be your Raptor character from Superpower Legends, right?
Yep.
All right, cool, cool. And if you didn't catch our actual play of Supers last week, you really should, because that was fun as hell.
That was a blast.
We'll be doing a sequel and releasing the stats for Cockney Robin, the Kung Fu Robot.
Cockney Robin?
I thought it was Cockney Robin. What?
It's Cockney Sarah.
God damn it. I'm sorry. I thought it was Cockney Robin.
Cockney Robin. Where are you going? Oh, I'm Batman's best friend.
Well, you said you were playing a Robin type, and you said you were Cockney. Yeah. So I just, in my head, it was Cockney Robin. I'm sorry. Cockney Sparrow. And now I feel like an asshole because, Jacob, I forgot your character's name completely. Who were you playing?
I was playing Codex, the all languages boy.
Okay, cool. We will see another adventure of those three. And then once I get another bag of fortune cookies so I can adequately roleplay the Kung Fu Robot.
That was great.
That was the most fun I've had in a while. But I'm a 44-year-old man with a kid, so there's a ceiling on how much fun I can have on a daily basis. But everybody, this has been a great podcast. Thank you very much, Brendan, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Love to have you back in the future if you got some time. And I'm gonna drop off. I think Walt wants to badger you into doing a demo session, so I will leave, so my delicate sensibilities aren't offended by that. And to our listeners, thanks for tuning in, and make sure to drop Ralph Walt an email to get a copy of the PDF of Master Generation. And we'll catch you next time with the Banff Podcast.